I'm Russ White, and this is MSU Today, and it's a pleasure and a privilege to welcome renowned MSU sociologist Dr. Carl Taylor back to the program. Dr. Taylor, great to see you as always.
It's great to see you again.
Your research in general revolves around reducing violence among American youth. Because of that, you have been honored by MSU with the MSU Community Engagement Scholarship Lifetime Achievement Award. I want to let people know that this award program has been established to provide university-wide recognition for senior faculty members of outstanding sustained accomplishment in community-engaged scholarship through research, creative activities, teaching and/or service, and practice over the span of a career. And due to the highly selective nature of this recognition, it is intended to be conferred rarely and only as warranted by a truly exemplary body of work. And given Dr. Taylor's long years of collaboration and leadership in university-community partnerships, anchored in the rigor of scholarship and designed to improve community life, MSU is honored to present Dr. Taylor with this award. Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Can you describe some of your research and how has it evolved? I mentioned that in general, broadly, it's about reducing violence among American youth, but talk about your research and how it's evolved.
Good question. It has evolved. Everyone that is familiar with my work, and a lot are not, I'm sure, but it's focused on, in the beginning, on urban America, and in particular, Detroit. So that means that we're looking at post-industrial America, post-industrial Detroit. And it's a very conflicted viewpoint. My work has, I thought it started out, or it did start out from my standpoint, from looking at, really, I don't like the word inner city because Detroit is designed funny, but it definitely is the urban location and urban schools. And so this is a tightly knit fabric of social justice and social injustice. And so we are now looking at the dissolution, I think, very strongly of public education. We're looking at the loss of employment and the introduction of artificial intelligence. And more importantly, I think we have ignored or not put enough focus on the disintegration of the American family. Mm-hmm. And in different communities, in particular the Black community, where Daniel Monaghan had controversially predicted that it was in for some rough times. And whether you agree or disagree, we are now experiencing rough times.
So what are still some of the challenges and opportunities ahead then?
Well, that's a tough question, Russ, because one person's opportunity is another person's disgust. That we're a very divided nation, very polarized, and have been in the Southeast Michigan region, and in particular in Detroit. We can do all the public relations we want. We can tiptoe around the tulips. The fact is that we are not better off in so many ways today than we were 50 years ago. So observing this change to the people, to the environment, is a very surreal in many ways to me. Downtown Detroit is a just thriving metropolis. It is, there you have all your professional teams, sports teams downtown. You have the gorgeous Fox Theater. Yet it doesn't, to me at all, come anywhere near to the substance of holding a very diverse population together as Santa Claus at J.L. Hudson's and the Thanksgiving Day original parade, then the Verner's operation on Woodward. You know, I'm talking about things that are landmarks. So we do understand that change comes, but Detroit took a drastic change, and not for the better, in 1967 with an insurrection. Some people say riot. But I don't think the city has ever truly recovered from that. So some will have decided to look at downtown as a flagship, and it is. But it's really very similar to other big cities like Manhattan. You know, you can work in Manhattan, but you can't live in Manhattan. Mm-hmm. It has redefined class. I think that my research shows I'm acutely aware of the fact that we don't even discuss a lower class or working class. We're talking about a middle class that's under siege itself. It's being redefined. I look at my college graduates wondering, are they prepared to go into this techno new millennial world? And I'm very bothered by the lack of humanity that I'm seeing. Not to make this a bleak picture, but it's a serious picture. Yeah. You know, I think that you say, you know, what's the opportunity? Many behave like in policies and in government that there is no opportunity, that the only opportunity is for capitalism. I remember Lash LaRue here, the old econ professor, he used to get after me and said, Taylor, economics is not about anything but profit. That's what it's designed for. I would like to think that, following the spirit of John Hanna, my surrogate, Cliff Wharton, had a profound impact on me. As I said, Dr. Hanna began before I worked for Hanna. That was actually my first job as a Spartan ambassador, as a youngster.
Because you were in President Wharton's fellowship program. Talk about the influence he had on your life.
Yeah, well, that was the pivotal turn in my career. Very young career. I was very fortunate to be exposed to the Whartons, not just Dr. Wharton, but also Mrs. Wharton.
As so many today know, that couple from Wharton Center, which is wonderful, but you go back to his time as president here in some tough times.
Tough times. Times of war. Very similar to now in terms of themes, but very different in terms of attitudes and behavior. So it's been a journey that I'm reflective of in a positive way, but there's a lot of reality points that I still have failed, in my opinion. Humbly, I have to say that the university's changed, students have changed, the world has changed.
Well, and Dr. Taylor, tell me a little bit more about that. How have the students changed over the years? How has the curriculum had to change to maybe reflect that?
Well, one of my major protests as a professor in the classroom is the whole society. We don't read newspapers. Mm-hmm. And we don't, because newspapers, you know, how we get our information has changed. I think that's hurt us tremendously. I see it in the students. So when you asked that question before, that we have more contact one-on-one or even collectively with human beings. What we have now is more interaction with what you're surrounded by, the technology, phones. I was laughing the other day and a young woman had on a technical watch, the Apple Watch.
Yeah.
And she was looking at it. I said, what's wrong? And she said, oh, it told me I got to breathe. I started laughing. The watch has to tell you to breathe. Then I was talking with a friend, a retired law enforcement person. He went out to get his mail, slipped on the ice, and he said, the watch took over. You have fallen. Do you want us to call, you know, for help, and, you know, asking all these questions. Some people see that as great. I am a tinge bit more conservative. I'm not certain that I need this watch. And I think that is what's hindering us. I think that's our Achilles heel right now, that so many young people are totally dependent on this technology to tell them everything. So I don't see the interaction. I loved, in particular, summer school here back in the 60s and the 70s. You know, it was a quiet time. The whole campus seemed to slow down. You could sit out. We had classes out on the lawn. We could enjoy books. And yes, we were dealing with the counterculture of marijuana and things now that have flipped and said, if it's state-sponsored, it's a good thing because it brings us a profit. So that's very interesting. So I don't see the students taking up a protest of any substance. And it sounds like I'm pretty critical, but I also blame the older generation. So they may protest for seemingly a microsecond, but they don't seem to have, and how can they have so many distractions, so many other things defining who they are and what mm-hmm. they're doing. So that's how it's changed immensely. They don't read, which drives me nuts because that's all. I love books.
Yeah. Well, are you, doesn't sound like it, but are you optimistic? Are you pessimistic as we move forward?
Well, I've had enough of an experience with being pessimistic that to know that that is not the answer. As far as optimistic, in some shades I am. I run into that student or that coworker or someone that's not allowing themselves to become entangled. And it's been tough though, Russ. I have to say it's really tough. In particular for people who are struggling. You know, when I first started looking at a lot of this social phenomena, it seemed to be urban. But that's really not true. It's the whole society. As we looked at the government lockdown a couple of weeks back, that it is truly middle-class folks who are now in a position that I think that the mythology of why America is everything is being tested. That, you know, living paycheck to paycheck, the discounting of certain parts of education in some communities, not having, for example, public recreation. You know, I came up and I went to Detroit Central, and in the summer there was a gym teacher, usually was the playground director, but we had horseshoes. We had every activity that one could imagine for a young person, including kids who weren't real athletic. You know, they even had a corner for them, arts and crafts and so forth. There was a lot of mores and values that were being reinforced right there on that playground, you know, from the guys getting too excited playing basketball and started being profane, where the youth worker would look at you like, wait, 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 we don't talk like that here. The playing of baseball, organized baseball, and unorganized baseball. All of that seems to be now boiled down to, do you have the money? And the school has cut out the activity. At Detroit Central, we produced some of the greatest musicians. Andrew Smith, who's no longer with us, is a drummer. As a young boy, we weren't, you know, the stereotype of ghetto and drug dealers. Andrew Smith, at the age of 16, had a brand new Mercury Monterey, fully loaded. We were laughing. He could barely see over the steering wheel. He was this fantastic percussionist drummer. He was one of the greatest drummers. He was in the famed Motown, the brothers, I forget the exact name, but he was part of that was profoundly and prolifically recognized all over the world. And so he made that much money because he was in Motown sessions. We had a jazz band at Detroit Central that was phenomenal. Then, of course, we had jazz clubs all over the city and all over on the northwest side of town. Then Andrew, within a year, turned around and bought a Lincoln Continental. Today, that same image is saved for, if you have a high-priced car, nice clothes, you have to be selling drugs. Mm. Then you had the men in the community, working-class men that made good money. They worked hard in the foundry and those factories making those cars. But we had a sense of community, very strong sense. We had local markets, local merchants, and a sense of community. You look now where I did my work, and it's like, looks like the Book of Eli. It's very depressing. And on a day like today, I got to tell you, it's almost just eerie to see. You might see one animal going across a field, abandoned homes just like we look, you know, I've been in Europe. You travel, for example, in Germany where, you know, World War II, it took its toll, and you have these open fields where buildings have been removed. And that's the way Detroit looks, and Cleveland, and all of these communities. They have a model that I'm afraid nobody is admitting to, that the haves can live downtown in high-priced condos and apartments, and the have-nots are existing in infrastructures that are dated, unhealthy, you know, lead pipes, so forth. Very little policing, and very few people, and sometimes people living in abandoned homes. It's a very ugly picture, and it's a reality that my research has shown that it's not accidental. It is not, you know, because it's bad policies. You know, you look at what took place in Flint. Oops. You know, we poison the water. But this is all what moves everything, and that's what stands out to me in my research. Russ, what moves everything is monetary gain. And if you can't measure it by monetary gain, then it doesn't exist. And that's the farthest thing from true. Hmm.
Visiting with renowned MSU sociologist Dr. Carl Taylor on MSU Today. How does Detroit then, like you said, the Dan Gilbert and the Illiches, the downtown has maybe never been better, and Detroit's very big area-wise. How does a Detroit or a Cleveland, you know, expand that out to the neighborhoods, or is it just not possible now?
What a tough question today, Russ. that's an excellent question, not one that I'm sure that I can answer without being perhaps to some people idealistic or unreal. I think, number one, Americans and America has always done what it wants. We are a superpower, and what we value is where we place our resources. I think our two greatest challenges are, first, family, that we can pretend that everyone is on the same page. We can pretend that everyone has the same playbook, but that's not true. And so some people are equating different groups of people, you know, coded language, that those folks are, and other, you know, even slurs at time. The reality is that we need to come together with a agreeable, functional, basic training and understanding. And that's what we used to have. So I would differ with people. Don't tell me we can't do this, because we used to do this. We did. And race has always been the 300-pound elephant in the room. Yeah. But I lived in an integrated neighborhood in Detroit. My next-door neighbor, they had no children. They were German, Catholic. My family expected for me to shovel our neighbor's snow and cut their grass and take care of them, because they were elderly citizens, and it was the right thing to do. I couldn't take money. My brother and I, we couldn't take money for the work we did. Again, I go back to that sense of community, and we need to go back to a sense of family. And that doesn't mean that the family is going to be perfect, but the behavior that I'm seeing now has evolved over the past half century, that teachers used to be highly regarded on a pedestal. School was sacred ground. All of that's out the window now. So people want to blame the behavior on, and there's enough blame to go around. I'm not saying that. But you should be wise enough to understand as a society that if you only have the haves, then you can't expect too much from the have-nots if all they see is you're fat and I'm starving.
And that hollowing out of the middle class across the country is another huge issue.
Yeah, that's where it's getting really ugly. It's making no sense. And what we just had, what, in the last couple of weeks, that Ford had let go. These are what people don't understand. We're not, which it shouldn't matter. You lose jobs, you lose jobs. But those jobs, as you probably well know, were white-collar jobs. So there goes the American dream. You know, we were taught, my generation, that if you got a college degree, that you could expect and were entitled to the good life. And so now we live in paycheck to paycheck, reducing public education, replacing it with charter schools that are suspect. A lot of policies that are just suspect to, is this just a mere Trojan horse for capitalism? Mm-hmm. You know, that we need to understand the cornerstone of our society is public education. That is the one place that society allowed and gave opportunity for one to learn, pick oneself up, and improve one's life. And I'm a living example of it. You know, my dad passed when I was 13. My mom had to raise two boys. No, she wasn't a single mom because she was caught in a teen mom. She was a mother whose husband passed. My dad passed. I was 13 years old. My brother was 7. But because of the core values that came from that community, and I'm not just speaking of a Sunday school and church, which is important. I think some faith-based institution is important in young people's lives. But we were learning the fundamentals, Russ, of how to conduct ourselves as citizens. We don't do civics anymore in school. So we have given way to this trample over people, call them names. We have leadership at the very top of this nation that is very questionable. So we shouldn't be surprised at what we're getting.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that. This has all we've talked about sort of led to this toxic culture, maybe combined with the vitriol on social media. That
absolutely.
Have we been more, I've heard that the 60s were pretty rough. I was just a young child then, but have we been more polarized? Where are we going as a country? I mean,
yeah, we're going to hell in a handbasket, it looks like. But I have to call it nothing else but a love affair with the older, my older teammates when I was in the ninth grade. Matter of fact, a couple of Spartans, Sterling Armstrong and Umar Hassan, who was Tony Rutherford, the great, great football players out of Detroit. And we had a pipeline from Detroit to MSU Spartans, you know, that Harold Lucas and so forth. But I'm having a love affair now through social media that I'm, a lot of those old heads that, and they can't get over. Well, here's Carl Taylor today, and he's done well by many standards, all right? And I continuously go back and thank them. Umar Hassan is a very brilliant man. Sterling Armstrong was right here. He's still here in Lansing area. Clint Jones, he's not from Detroit. He's from Cleveland, but the great running back.
Yep.
But they were more than student athletes. They were leaders, and that's what was sown into our very being. Do you understand? And so we've lost our way. I think that we don't have that. Those men who are only, you know, like anywhere from 4 to 7 years older than me, I still look up to them. They were the guys that inspired me to be, quote, a good boy.
Yeah.
That's what we had in those days. And so we don't have that now. We have this if I don't agree with you, I felt, I don't know what you felt, but I felt embarrassed for that young boy who was in front of that older Native Indian gentleman. And so there this kid is, and he's behaving, and even afterwards, like he had a brand or disrespect, you know, of the elders. I still, that's what I'm saying, my hat is still off to the elders. Somebody said something to me the other day, so, is Dr. Wharton, you and him on the same level? I said, I'll never be on the same level. He's my surrogate. He's my mentor. I pay that homage and respect to my elders. I think that's missing. The way I'm talked to by students, I've been a popular professor, but in the same breath, I'm disappointed in the way they treat each other, you know, but you know this. You get off the bus. We used to get off the bus, and everybody's talking to everybody. I remember my sweet mates were from Iron Mountain. They're doctors today, MDs, and they were twins, and they were wrestlers. And we were fascinated with each other. I'm from Detroit. They're from Iron Mountain. I learned a lot. Some things I thought, whoa, that's pretty weird. And same for them. But I was able to, even that when I came here, the fall of 67, that was right after the riot in 67. And so a lot of students were looking at me and my cohorts as being aliens almost, like, what do you do? Like, well, we eat just like you eat, and you know, those things. This used to be a very sensitive community. I think it's struggling, it's trying, but it's not what it was. And the world isn't what it was. So we don't look out for each other. And so that, I would say the two greatest challenges, as I'm saying, is in my research, is that the family has to have some type of support. And that is not to cookie cutter families. You have to understand. Yeah. But it's, some things are just not acceptable. Some behavior, you know.
Yeah.
So it's just a different world. And then, of course, the other places I'm still saying is that I'm sitting here today because of a fundamentally very strong public education, yet that was still flawed because we didn't have the books that the kids had in the suburbs and we didn't have the same opportunities. But I'll tell you something. Matter of fact, my counselor, he's 90 years old. He lives up here, Clarence Tamor, great guy. They gave us those intangibles, as our parents did. You know, many of the parents of working class folks didn't have extensive formal education.
Yeah.
But boy, did they support it, and did they expect it from us. Our parents, our families, they were very proud when we graduated from high school. They were very proud when we graduated from college. They thought, oh, that was the greatest thing that could happen. That was the American dream come true. We're not seeing that now. So that's, to me, the challenge of my research.
And Dr. Taylor, I'm wondering, what do you think of just all that MSU is going through right now?
Well, that's probably the toughest question, yeah, because we love our green and white. It brings me no consolation that Penn State and many other universities are going through. And it's not one-dimensional. It's the changed world that we're living in now, you know. The technology, the absence of caring and touching correctly. You know,
yeah,
we didn't have, you know, we just had a lot of fun. At the same time, we do have opportunity to, I think, focus in on some things that were there all along. One of the problems is that we didn't realize that a lot of the things that we were doing, interacting with human beings, were not correct. The demonization of someone because of their gender or their sexuality, those things were there. You and I both know, yeah, that they were there. So this is our opportunity. But right now we've had an unbelievable stroke of horrific luck here at MSU. Mm. You know, our public face has been damaged. What I do feel very strong about is the resilience and the fact that I know there are a lot of good people here across the board, whether they're staff, students, faculty, folks like yourself. They haven't given up, but boy, it doesn't help, though, when the backdrop to me is so politically distorted. You know, I had a young lady ask me the other day in class, had I ever sexually assaulted a woman? Oh, I went through the floor, you know, just like, my goodness, I can't imagine ever asking any professor that when I was, you know, she didn't see any problem with it. Is it a good question? Not in front of 150 people, students, you know. Gladly I can answer those, absolutely not. But that's what we're dealing with. So, you know, we can be a lot more sensitive. And yet there's a ton of things that we are doing well that now are overshadowed by a very, very dark cloud. And then, you know, when you couple that with the backlash of both local, state, and federal government, we're not always seeing, we're seeing this polarization that, and what I think is more damning than anything, this refusal, this denial to acknowledge when we're wrong.
Yeah. I think that's, as we discussed too a little bit, where the social media sort of comes in. In one hand, it's wonderful. You're connecting with old friends. I get to read your thoughts, right, when you post them. But at the, but then the vitriol, and yeah, I think that the thing, the vitriol on keyboards, where somebody would never say something to your face. I sometimes wonder, despite all the good, that we might be better off if the social media had never been.
Say,
I hate to sound old. It's very useful in many ways, but overall, man, has it really benefited us?
It stands the test of time, what you're saying, Russ. What we need, we don't need that at all. Yes, some of the things that have been said to me, I've had ugly packages sent with, you wouldn't believe, you know, animals and excrement and, oh, you know, things that you just like, what in the world? And so it shows also in our driving, in our interacting with children, children interacting with each other, that they're being taught this by their parents and their community. It seems that, and it's worldwide, that's what's disturbing. I always looked at MSU as being that leader out front, showing us a better way. I'm not saying that we aren't anymore, but we certainly are being tested.
Yeah.
And we're being tested with some very sensitive issues. This whole issue of sexual assault has been just ungodly. You know, it really has been tough. And I have to say that as I'm stepping down, selfishly, I'm glad. I mean, there's some things, behavior going on that it's forcing the institution to, I think, well, we went through a point recently where we were very aggressive, bureaucratic, and extreme, you know, and so we have to watch what we say, to the point that I've always been very free in the classroom. I don't have that freedom anymore. Mm. I don't feel free in this society. You know, if you say the wrong thing, I was teasing, I said something the other day, and I'm automatically on guard. No, 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 I didn't mean that. This is how I meant that. Well, that becomes tiring, in particular if you've been teaching as long as I have, where you could say pretty much what you want. Mm. I asked, our standing rule in my class is that we will respect each other's rights to have different opinions, and I'm more than willing to shepherd them in, and we listen. We will not tolerate the ugliness that you're talking about and the uncivil tone and remarks. Not having that. But there's a school of thought now out here that, yeah, I'm going to say what I want, and you'll be damned.
And it does, doesn't it seem like, too, people are just looking to be offended these days?
Yeah, like, you know, so, well, I didn't mean that. So, yeah, it's tough. So that's one of the things that has actually, it hit me all at once. I was really surprised. And then I had an incident that was totally, totally blown out of proportion and was false. And what I also don't like, the fact is that we're not holding people accountable when they make a mistake. So you learn from that. You do that in the real world. You know, I usually tell my students, my undergrads, that my job is to prepare you for the real world or for graduate school. They're not going to tolerate that type of behavior. But just a little bit of kindness, that the fact that humans are flawed. So, you know, if I can look you in the eye and say, I'm sorry. But then when I see our politicians not able to say that sorry, or to usher in very draconian, very punitive policies against everybody. You know, so where we've come to, at least what I've gained from my experiences and my research, is that unless that body falls on you, you know, in other words, I don't feel bad about Russ losing someone in his family until I had the same thing happen to me. Whereas I remember very well in Detroit when I was 5 years old, leaving out of my home on Hazelwood and 12th, and a young Jewish boy had been stabbed. And my mother ran across the street to offer support and comfort to his mother. She was hysterical. You know, I'm only 5 years old, and the ironic twist was that that day, that was the same time the newspapers in Detroit, we had the African-American newspaper, the Michigan Chronicle.
Oh, yeah.
It's a mint green paper. But they had the headlines, the front page was Emmett Till. So that was just, that was my introduction to violence, and it never ceased. It just kept evolving, and 67 got worse, and then started seeing, there's certain things you just didn't do, Russ. You know, I'm sitting there looking at you now, you have glasses on. You know, we had a rule in the street when I was a kid coming up, I couldn't hit you. Say, Russ, take off the glasses. You know, long as guys, you know, a lot of guys will hold their glasses because they know that would spare them. What I'm saying, we had rules among
the and rough fists are a lot better than guns and knives.
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, it's always great talking to you, Dr. Taylor. We've been a little bit pessimistic. I hope we can be a little bit more hopeful, but, and maybe this is the toughest question of all, I don't know, but if you were the czar of improving things or helping children adapt to this new world, I mean, just what are your thoughts on some things you think the state, the country, the university need to do?
Well, that's a scary thought.
You know, to improve things, to move forward.
I think that the important thing is education is important for the knowledge. And that which should be included is the fact that we are sensitive to others, and in particular others that are not like us. If I was a czar, I would put away this nonsense with the violence. I just wouldn't tolerate violence. I wouldn't promote it. That goes over in your area, the media, you know, that there's certain things that we shouldn't promote, you know, that. And then people are going to holler that I'm, you know, but that's what I would cut down on that. I would really work on one-on-one with families. I think that we need something like a Peace Corps to go in. And it's not, again, you know, some people will subconsciously think this is all about urban, but I'm seeing very tough times in rural communities. And so the rural folks are part of our family as Americans also. I would distinguish more of a unity by having, we're afraid of each other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we can agree to disagree. You and I don't, we don't have to hate each other because we don't agree on something, you know.
You can disagree without being disagreeable.
Yes, yes. So I work very hard at that. I think that, and more public education is important. And public education goes beyond the bricks and mortar. You know, public education is, in our spiritual, you know, faith-based institutions. Yeah. But it's also, it is about the atmosphere that we create. I think right now, what's very depressing, I talked to a young woman this morning whose brother just had a heart attack this morning and passed. Mm. And so I was desperately trying to get her, because she's poor, some good mental health support. And that's something that we don't talk about enough. Yeah. We don't put money into mental health. We should have passed this whole era of, you're cuckoo, you're crazy. Mental health is as important as physical.
Right.
They go one and one. So we need to support that. And we need to be able to support and help folks. You know, the old saying, you know, do I teach you to fish or do I give you a fish? I want to teach you to fish so you can get your own. You know, there are things. You got to create jobs and meaningful jobs. And, you know, education is critical. The technology is important, and yet we're watching, you know, again, you asked me about my research. I sit there and I look in Detroit in those neighborhoods where AT&T had, you know, satellites and workers there. You know, you had operators, and all of that now is gone, same here at the university. So how far do we go with the technology? And that's the question that I'm having. So as a czar, if I was any type of czar of goodwill, I'm afraid of the technology. I think the technology, they've already proved that it talks to itself. So I don't know. That's a tough question. But I think we need to just be a little more, not a little more, a lot more mindful of humanity and animals.
Yeah.
I include animals in that.
Well, Dr. Taylor, congratulations on a wonderful career and recently earning the MSU Community Engagement Scholarship Lifetime Achievement Award. Thanks for sharing your wisdom with us today, and all the best moving forward.
Well, it's great seeing you. I love visiting you. We were doing a little regular, and then we had a big drought.
This was a great catch-up, so yes, always appreciate your wisdom.
And I appreciate what you do here in communicating. I'm very thankful for getting this award. I'm very humbled by this award. The fact is that I'm still able to. You asked of a plus, a positive note is that this is a great network of Spartans throughout the world.
Yeah, no question.
And I'm part of that network. And the fact that I still benefit from 92-year-old, the former president, the former chancellor of New York, the former deputy secretary of state, Cliff Wharton is more than my surrogate. And others, I think we have had some tough times, but there have been a lot of leadership, some that have went to the wayside, but we've had great leaders. That's what Spartans are.
Yeah, Spartans will.
We're tough.
That's right. Dr. Taylor, thanks again.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
That's MSU's renowned sociologist, Dr. Carl Taylor, and I'm Russ White. This is MSU Today.